The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads ensure you can take on any adventure. Available H-Track all-wheel drives so you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud. Standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together. Available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone. Whether you're tailgating out in the dirt lot, Carter Finley, shout out Carter Finley, or whether you're whitewater rafting, taking the entire family on an adventurous trip, maybe you're out camping at Mount Rogers. I used to go as a kid, wish my parents had a Hyundai Santa Fe. The Hyundai Santa Fe is perfect for your family outing. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast, everyone. Sadly, it's once again Ryan Wilson hosting the show, not Will Brinson. We're in Indianapolis.
Is that a sad thing,
yeah.
Ryan? Is that sad?
I heard that rating spiked. They almost doubled.
This is
I heard people honestly didn't notice that Will wasn't a part of it.
Ooh.
Sometimes number two becomes number one.
That's right. Just Wally Pip. Things happen. Will Brinson.
There's been a lot of Wally Pip.
There's been a lot of Wally pooping
Wally
going on.
That's right. So I'm Ryan Wilson here with Jamie Eisenberg, Brady Quinn, and Jason Lock. I'm four. Pete Prisco has bowed out graciously today. But we're in Indianapolis, day two of the combine. What you hear in the background is Pete Prisco doing bench press. It's actually the players are here behind us. I'm not sure which.
They're kind of in front of us,
which group
wide receivers.
Wide receivers are out there bench pressing. So those who have chosen to do so, some others have decided to do it at their pro day. Anyway, we're going to talk about some buzz from Indy, the league news, about the CBA. Jason's going to talk about that. We heard, Mike McCarthy, the new Dallas coach, talk about Dak Prescott and, some news about Cam Newton. So, let's start with you, Jason, in terms of where we're at in the CBA.
Sure.
We know some of the players seem really unhappy about it. It sounds like mostly players who have made a lot of money.
Yeah.
If you're a younger player, it sounds like they might be more inclined to vote with what is going on.
Well, yeah. I mean, look, there's 1,900 individuals who will be voting on this. We tend to talk a lot about stars, and we tend to focus on what a Russell Wilson tweets or what a J.J. Watt tweets because they have millions of followers. But there's hundreds, probably more than 1,000 guys making the vet minimum or right around it, whether they're on a rookie contract or whether they're on what might be their last contract. And those guys have the opportunity in the short term to make another $100,000, which could be a 33% raise, 25% raise, 20% raise, less depending on how much you make. But, you know, for those kind of guys, at least a 10% raise, and they're going to have to work less because there's going to be less training camp. There's going to be less practices pre-season and regular season. And there's going to be more jobs because you're adding spots to the practice squad. You're adding game day active spots. And that's a big deal because a lot of guys have incentives tied to whether they're active each week or not. So there's more opportunity, more money, and it's happening right now.
I don't want to contradict anything you're saying. I did not see that they were going to lessen the offseason. I actually thought that was one of the things the owners didn't want to agree to, is limiting how much of that. Now, maybe they limit some of the...
Well, we're going from four to two, maybe three preseason games.
Right, understandable, which, again, no one's really playing their starters anyway. So, yeah. Honestly, it really takes more of an opportunity to put film out there for some of those back into the rosters, minimum wage guys. I would say this is going to pass because it only takes a majority vote.
Right.
And as GLC just pointed out, clearly the majority of players in the NFL, they are making closer to the minimum. And so they're looking at this and saying, great, I get a little bit bump in pay. The problem is the guys who have had made the money, they realize that this isn't a great deal. They could probably get more. There is no deadline here. They're not pushing this thing to a deadline where they actually have more leverage. And so is it progress? Yes, from the previous deal. Is it going to help out those guys get more? Yes, but as we talked with Scott Pioli, a former general manager, he said, look, part of the issue is they've got this to a set amount instead of a percentage of the cap. So once that cap explodes, this amount might be 10% like you had talked about as far as their increase in pay, but it's not going to be once that cap continues to rise because you've capped that amount. So to me, I think Russell Wilson, some of the other players who have been more vocal about it, and Russell, by the way, is someone who avoids controversy.
He's a politician for the most part. Yeah.
No, but he avoids
He wants to play it right down the middle.
Yeah, yeah. And he's actually openly saying this is a bad deal. I think that speaks more volumes to it, because I would argue the counter that if stars who have already made their money, they obviously want to make more money, they would want to push this deal through because right. they don't want to work stoppage. Those are the guys who are incentivized the most to go back and play because they're making the most.
So Russell Wilson's tweet was, the NBA and MLB are doing it right. Players come first. Marquise Pouncey was a little gruffer. Man, this S is so effing crazy. I vote no. F that S. So on and so forth. So if Aaron Rodgers comes out, J.J. Watt, Russell Wilson, guys that are arguably well-respected on their teams, Marquise Pouncey, and Brady, you played through the CBA in 2011. If the team leaders are saying, hey, guys, you should do this, and as JLC pointed out, someone at the bottom of the roster can get a 100K salary bump, how are you reconciling that?
It's not going to be 100K. It's probably going to be close to like 60. I think when it's all said and done. Based on the numbers we've
90.
Seen, we don't know. We'll see what those numbers are.
But if you're in that locker room,
because
if
it's about $3 million per team, it really comes out to about 60, especially with a expanded roster. But if you're in that locker, this is how it goes. The majority, because everyone's got an equal say in all this. And that's the great thing about it, but at the same time, you also incorporate people who are less informed about this, and you incorporate people who haven't been through this before. Whereas when you've got some of those older heads are in there, yeah, they've made more money, they've played longer, but at the same time, they know what's best for everyone and future generations, and that's what you're trying to do. You're not trying to win in the short term, you're trying to win in the short and long term. And that's the problem with this deal, is the owners have crafted this perfectly within the public to basically make it look as if, well, these minimum wage, the majority of the players in the league get this pay bump. Otherwise, this deal might not be in there in the future. This deal is still going to be there in the future because the owners are incentivized to want to do it too. They're making a ton of money, not only from TV networks, but eventually from gambling too. So this whole idea that they're going to pull back from this in the future.
Well, let me ask you this.
Here's what
I would
say.
Vote?
If
I vote against it.
If players don't like the deal and don't like where things stand.
Sorry, I got to interrupt this podcast. My man over here has the jersey of all the guys, the failed quarterbacks in Cleveland, and he wants this sign.
Is Prisco on that then?
No, I was a disaster.
Pete Prisco has decided to come back.
That's going to be kind of hard to sign, though. Yeah, like how's he going to do that?
How's he going
to sign over it?
The front or the back?
So Prisco found a Browns fan wearing a Browns uniform with shoulder pads and everything.
It's a Tim Couch jersey.
All the quarterbacks since Tim Couch.
There you go.
And
Tim
you're
Couch
a pro pulling off an autograph on that.
That's not
yeah,
even
yeah.
legible.
That's pretty.
You signed a lot of
yeah, but that's pretty good.
It's not really legible, but
it's good.
I've told them before.
That's a
so
tough material.
They've got in Halloween every year. In Halloween, there's someone who has a graveyard of all the past quarterbacks who play for the Cleveland Browns, and we all have our own tombstone with the years we were there. So I have already been killed off basically every single Halloween since 2009 when I got traded by Eric Mangini to the Denver Broncos.
So we're talking to the ghost of Brady Quinn.
Pretty much. Yeah. Pretty much.
So anyway.
Well, no, I was going to say, look, if they have a problem with this.
It was a very interesting conversation for Pete.
Yeah. And I understand why they do. And I don't – look, a 10-year deal to me is kind of crazy. And there's a lot of economic indicators in here that I think should be a little bit different. But the reality is D. Smith – is okay with this, because at any point in time, they could have said, you know what, we don't even need to bring this to a vote. We don't feel like we're close enough. And no matter how much pressure we get from the owners, there's still a year left on this deal.
Why'd they change the threshold? Because it used to be 2/3.
That's what
I'm saying.
So if maturity. You have issues with it, I think it's kind of misplaced to be kind of screaming out into the ether or,
by the way,
you know.
D. Smith isn't viewed great amongst the players.
No, I know.
Unfortunately,
but
there just hasn't been a great candidate to uproot.
But I'm saying the issue is within the PA, because there were several times where they could have paused this thing, and they didn't. And I get that they're getting pressure from the owners, but they didn't have to bring this to a vote. The moment they sent that term sheet out a week ago to all the players, you knew at some point it's going to go to a vote, and a lot of guys will probably vote with their pocketbook. That ended up being a great service to the owners.
I keep going back to the fact that there's no deadline here. We also have a deadline.
That's what I'm saying. So why did it happen?
So
it happened because the PA let it happen.
So, Brady, let me ask you this. When you were in the locker room in 2011, how many teammates of yours changed their opinion?
It was different because we did hit a deadline. We did hit a work stoppage. Now, granted, the preparation of how we prepared for that work stoppage was different, right? We had prepared to a degree. We had $60,000 that was in a non-interest earning account, and players were able to tap into that. The problem is many players live beyond their means, and right. they don't get those checks until they get to the season. So, we were getting closer to the season. I think as it became more apparent that they might miss game checks, then it became more problematic, and guys started wanting to push the deal. Guys who had already made money but potentially were going to be making more money in the future wanted to get back to playing so that they could make more money. Drew Brees, for example, was one of the leaders, guys who wanted to push that deal through and capitalized big time in 2012. Yeah. So the hard part is there's no way you really can ultimately prepare for this, because every player has to be accountable for saving and being frugal and making sure that they're putting money aside.
But we know that's not the case.
And that's not the case, right. Especially for 2,000 people. They're not going to do that. So the owners know that, and that's why they can send out the messaging like they have and the bullet points, and they can entice a majority of the players to agree to this deal.
So, JLC, what happens next?
Well, this vote, we'll see. Again, sort of uncharted territories. The PA, last time I checked in, wasn't sure exactly the mechanism they were going to use to count these votes and to gauge these votes. It'll probably end up being done electronically. This process could end up taking a week to 2 weeks. In the meantime, we're operating under the current CBA, the last year of the current CBA, which means the transition and franchise period will open on Thursday. Teams will have their 2 weeks to apply a franchise and a transition tag if they so choose. At some point, if the players ratify this new agreement, while that period's still going on, teams may have to withdraw. We may go into the new rules as they're constructed under this, discussed CBA, in which case you'd have to remove the tag from one of those players for teams that applied too. But that's probably where this was heading. And when we were down at the Super Bowl and the PA did their annual State of the PA press conference, most years you could count on D. Smith ratcheting up the rhetoric, saying, guys better save your money.
Right.
We might have a 2-year work stoppage. Right. We're going balls to the wall. He said none of that.
No.
He said, we're brothers. This is family business. We're keeping it in-house. He wouldn't say if they were going to vote or not. You might as well have hung a thing for the owners saying, we're ready to do a deal. We're going to take whatever you have on the table around the combine, knowing the league year is starting in the middle of March. That was the biggest indicator in the world. That there was none of that fight. There was none of that vigor. There was none of that D. Smith, I'm
fire
coming after
belly.
You.
Right. Fire the belly.
Pete Prisco would have been very disappointed in the fire in the belly quotient displayed by union ownership. But that told me right there, this is getting done.
Jamie, you're awake. What do you think about all this?
The thing you mentioned about the tags, that's going to impact potentially two teams, right? You got Dallas that could use the two tags on
Tampa,
Dak.
Tennessee. And
Tampa was going to be the other one. But yeah, Tennessee as well, with Shaq Barrett and Jameis, Dallas with Dak and Amari, and Tennessee would be Tannehill and
quarterback, running back.
Yep. So, Jamie, we're at the combine, so we might as well talk about some combine things since we're here. I want to get your thoughts on, you're a Tim Tebow guy because you went to Florida.
Love him.
Feel like Jalen Hurts is sort of in the Tim Tebow category in terms of his
future. Don't put him in that category. Jalen Hurts is a much better passer. Yeah. He's a better passer.
Don't disrespect Tim Tebow like that.
Exactly.
By the way, you want a great photo. Go to Brady Quinn's Wikipedia page.
I don't think it's there anymore.
You took it down?
No, I didn't take it down. I'm saying it's not there anymore.
You took it down.
Weird how that works.
You took it down?
How can I take it
you
down?
You took it down.
I don't run the site. How do I take it down?
There was a picture on his Wikipedia page of Brady sitting on a bench with the Denver Broncos and Tim Tebow standing over him, looking like he's lecturing Brady about how to play quarterback.
He was preaching.
You're not serious.
He was preaching.
You took it down?
I don't have control over that. I'm joking. I don't know. How would I know?
Was he literally talking from the Bible
at that point? Probably. I don't know.
You took it down.
And there's a lot of gospel talk.
You took it off your Wikipedia.
On the sidelines? How do I take it off? I don't own Wikipedia. Yeah, I was on the sidelines.
Would he be like, okay,
about?
John 3:14?
We know people who have edited your Wikipedia.
We're going to throw a
9
route and win this game. Like,
you're
what?
A terrible pastor. John 3:16, JLC.
I'm trying to think of the old signs. Yeah. Whatever.
3:14.
But like, seriously though, would he like be?
It might be another good verse. We should probably look it up.
3:14 is underrated, by the way. It's the most underrated Bible verse.
Jalen Hurts.
I have no idea what you're talking.
John 12:5.
Jalen Hurts won't be preaching on the sidelines. But Jamie, do you have any?
Wait a minute. You don't feel like there's more Tim Tebow preaching on the sidelines to mine here?
I don't
want to hijack your show, but like, I'm wondering, we've all hijacked Brinson's show.
So, do you want to expound on the potential guy?
Like, would he seriously?
Oh, I mean, at some point, I'm sure we had those conversations. Yeah.
Oh, you don't have a specific.
You don't have like a specific time.
No, no.
You edited your Wikipedia page.
You've kind of blocked that all out of your memory, haven't you?
It's unbelievable.
Have you kind of like just taken the Denver, like taken that and just blocked it out?
No, no, not at all.
Repressed it?
Not at all. No, that's why I think, like, again, if you're trying to compare Tim Tebow, yeah,
there it is.
Still there.
Thank you.
Debo found it.
There it is.
I just saw Debo.
Still there.
He probably was preaching.
He's definitely lecturing.
See?
And he's flexing his right bicep.
You know what the best part about today is?
He's probably asking what exactly went on in the field.
Pete could not get off the show. Pete could not get off the show quicker than Ruggs is going to run. And he's sitting off to the side critiquing everything that we're saying.
Why are you still here?
Doing absolutely nothing.
For who? So, why are you still here?
Jamie, Jalen Hurts.
Yes.
Well, so back to that real quick. I don't like comparing the two because
I was trying to make a segue. I don't know what I was
going to say. I'm listening to
him. One or two, I think he's a better passer. Bottom line.
I don't disagree. But I want to talk about Jalen Hurts in the instance that he is not going to do other drills than quarterback drills. Anyone care about that? Is that in his best interest?
But look, that was a media-asked question. That was not from a team.
Fair enough, but
people
he answered
misconstrued
it.
That. No, I know.
Yeah, so I just wanted to...
If he believes he's a good quarterback, play quarterback. You know, same thing with Trace
There's
McSorley.
There's plenty of time if you have to convert this kid. Why do we need to convert him before he even gets a chance?
Hold on, what are we talking
if we
about?
Even have to?
Why would we need to?
Right, I agree.
No, I agree, but it's time. Like even the people who are coming at it from that mindset, like, let the kid be who he is before you try to change him. Give him a half a chance before you're already trying to mold him into what you think he needs to be. I mean, Jesus. Holy Tebow.
Jamie? Thank you for joining us on the Pick Six Podcast. No, I'm kidding. So at this point, what's his what's his draft ceiling at this point? I mean,
I think third round's the highest he could go.
That sounds high.
Well, and that's why I said it's the highest he could go. I think it's more realistic that he goes somewhere, you know, fourth, fifth round, depending on where he throws and what the plan is for him.
But my thing is that he feels like Taysom Hill to me in terms of the
yeah, there's some of that. And I think the much younger. He's younger. He's not as injury prone. He's faster than people realize.
Better quarterback.
I can demonstrate that. You can make. There's no doubt. Looking at BYU, Taysom Hill versus Jalen Hurts at Oklahoma and at Alabama, I think you make the case. Yeah, he's comparable as far as their athleticism. Probably a little bit more dynamic, and then probably a better passer too.
I was talking to someone earlier this week in the league, and they made the case. They had just studied all the Oklahoma running game, and they made the case that Jalen Hurts is the best running back in the Big 12. How do you feel about that?
Well, no. The kid at Oklahoma State, I'd say, was the best running back. Yeah, Chuba Hubbard by far. He might have been, you can make the case he might have been up there for the best in the country, next to Jonathan Taylor and Dobbins and those guys. But, look, I'm not going to disrespect him in that way because I think he's a true dual-threat quarterback. He reminds me of
– No, he wasn't meaning it in a disrespectful way. Right.
Comes off that way a little bit. But he reminds me a little bit of Deshaun Watson when he runs. Like, he's smooth. He's faster than you think. And – You know, is he as good of a passer? No, but, you know, over time, the right system, he could potentially develop. I just think this is a great point in time for him to enter into the NFL with offenses being more open to a lot of the quarterback run game.
So what does he need to do on the field this week to change anyone's opinion who thinks that
the biggest thing for him is hit them all. No, not, it's again, he's set up to fail because every quarterback that throws the combine is set up to fail. However, he's not gonna have a stronger arm than Herbert or Eason. So immediately that, like, wow factor of the ball zipping out of their hands, it's not going to be there for him quite as much. If he hits them all, he knocks them all down, right? We're at the carnival shooting down little ducks or whatever to win our little prize.
I'm picturing little Priscos, actually.
Priscos, perfect.
Wouldn't that be even better? Somebody should make that prop from when we're out in Vegas at the draft and we can shoot Priscos.
But if that's the case, then I think he comes away with a good day.
All right. Like I said, we saw Chase Young. All right. That's on the show or the previous show? We saw Chase Young at the restaurant today. Did you see him back there?
I did, yes.
Yeah, he was pretty big. You care about him not working out? Is the number two overall pick?
No, I mean,
anyone care? No. I mean, is there any reason?
Oh, what do you mean? He's not a competitor. He doesn't want to go out there.
Doesn't
and
have enough fire in his belly.
Oh, it's,
he can't. Doesn't he want to win the combine?
Well, that's so. Who's like, who's
kidding.
The guy
I'm
to watch? I know you are, but who is the guy to watch now? Whose chances to shine with Chase Young not needing to work out? That's a defensive player.
Know.
That Julian Aguara is a guy who could stand out, Brady.
How much is he going to do? Is he going to? I mean, if I'm him, I'm not doing a damn thing either. Like, what does he have?
Is Akuda going to run?
Oh, I don't know.
That's what I'm saying. If I was him, why would I do anything?
Yeah, I mean, Akuda, I wouldn't mind seeing run just to do it and get it over with. I think he can run a low 4.3. But in regards to Aguara, I actually wouldn't mind seeing him working out because I think he needs to. He was at a great point in the season of his play before he got hurt. He was really continuing to progress. And then, you know, I think for him to come out, show that he's healthy, show what he's capable of, like, he's a guy that could grab a lot of attention and solidify potentially a spot in the first round if the health looks good, if the testing in the field with drills and all that looks good. Because he will look the part. There's no doubt.
Yeah, we actually talked to Andrew Thomas, the left tackle out of Georgia today, and he said Aguara and Khalil Kareem were two both incredibly difficult guys to block for different reasons, the defensive ends at Notre Dame. We talked about his measurements earlier on the previous show on HQ. Chase Young's 264. He's almost 6'5". He was freakishly big in person. I didn't expect him to be that big.
Yeah, when we saw him at lunch.
Yeah, that
big,
was that
big
was
guy. Nice.
Defense is, obviously, we just talked about that. We talked about quarterbacks yesterday on the podcast. This is right in your wheelhouse, Jamie. Give us one wide receiver and one tight end that you're going to be interested in watching run around in shorts and t-shirts.
I mean, I want to see how fast Ruggs is. You know, that's the key. You know, he's going to run fast, but is he going to break John Ross's record? You know, that's the fun part of it. You know, I think you want to see, can he get to the 4.22, right?
I think that is the record, yeah.
Right, can he break that? You know, he's in that conversation for the third receiver, you know, with T. Higgins and, you know, maybe Justin Jefferson, you know, whoever you're going to put after the top two guys.
Interesting.
You don't agree that he's in that conversation?
I think Rager, because of his speed, will be in that conversation. You know, LaVisca Chenault's going to be the eye of the beholder. That's another interesting one. I mean, there's so many guys.
He's another one I want to see run.
Ayuk might surprise a lot of people, but only 1 year of production. You know, you didn't see him as much 2 years ago. And maybe that was because N'Keal Harry was more the featured guy, but there's all those questions.
So, Brady, do you think 4.22 over-under for Henry Ruggs?
Here's what concerns me, and this sounds so dorky and geeky. We started kind of breaking down the 40, because you really do have to look at it as a track event, and so you know how many steps it takes you to run a 40. I want to say around 20-something or 20 is like kind of the guess there, and I think I was talking with him about this. It might have been another player, but we were talking about like your 10, because your 10 is everything. Your start's everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so typically you know after your first few steps like how it's going to go, and by 11 yards you want to get to about 7 steps, and you don't want to have any more than that, otherwise you've wasted too much or you've stumbled. And you don't want to have really any less, otherwise you're probably reaching, because you really want to be driving. So every single step should be pushing off the ground until you start to pick your head up around 20 yards and then start to cycle. So that's like a track background start, right? Ruggs really doesn't have a track background. So I'm kind of curious to see over this period of time if he's going to be able to have that start where it needs to be to run 4.21, because that is just blazing fast when you really think about it.
It's insane.
But it's just like we're breaking all that down, and it's like he'll never run from that position.
Never,
no one's ever going to ask him to start with his hand down and run a route. You know what I mean? It just kind of – and I get that why we obsess about it, because there's nothing else going on in football right now.
Yeah.
But it's like when you really think about it in those terms, it's like –
I don't know. I'm a factual with track.
The
I love
dude
the 40,
is clearly incredibly fast.
I remember when we were at the Super Bowl in Atlanta and you were grilling Tyreek Hill about is he the fastest guy in the league. Yeah.
Because it matters. Like, that's like one of those locker room things where you sit there and talk to guys. It's like – I mean, we'll be sitting there like bored in the offseason and be like, all right, if people start talking trash, basketball, racing. And then you'll see them walk out on the field and there'll be some money laid down.
Yeah, I was going to say, what's the most you've seen bet on a 40?
Because
I'm guessing dudes just start throwing into the pot,
In the
right?
thousands, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you've seen in the thousands. And so you'll see that. Or like no one's like betting game checks or anything like
right.
that. It's using the offseason. They don't want to risk it during the year. But there's no doubt you see some or you know, picking up some alcohol or a dinner tab or something.
Right.
So – two things. We talked to Jedrick Wills, the right tackle out of Alabama, today on Tuesday. Is that Tuesday?
Today's Wednesday.
Wednesday, sorry. And he wants to run a sub-5:40. And he admitted, he goes, look, man, I just want to have bragging rights.
Yeah.
And as soon as this combine's over, I go into a completely different training regime, because no one gives a crap about how fast you run when you're trying to block someone. Brady also, our guy Danny Cannell, told us about his 40 time at his pro day.
Yeah.
Wind dated on the track. And can you beat a 4.82?
Yeah, go look at my stats. I already beat
He also got a 4.78 in his first try. They made him run it again because they didn't trust.
I think
the
I had like an average of a 4.73 in my low.
Wow,
my
Brady, moving
4.69. So, and I actually had bad form out of my start, but yeah,
go
back in the day.
Go check my stats.
Just saying, bro.
Just saying. All right, okay.
Can what you beat you run now?
Oh gosh, I don't even know. My biggest issue, like, you know. I play baseball, right? And so the good of playing baseball is the different arm angles, whatnot. The bad is no one teaches you how to run. And so until I got out to Arizona at API, no one taught me, like, how you really should feel when you run and how to cycle and do all those drills. And so for a lot of these guys, it's like that. Like, that's why I mentioned Ruggs, because Ruggs was just like an athlete. And he was a guy who plays football. His football coach mentioned for him to go out there and try to run track. And, you know, he really just didn't really see the point. The coach didn't want him. So it's learning about how, like, the technique of all that. And I used to grab, so when I would run, like, my foot would actually strike out in front of me. When you do that, you're more susceptible to actually pulling your hamstrings. Bad form. But, you know, you don't know that until they film you and they teach you and, like, no, this is how you should feel when you're running and cycling your legs. So, it's a whole different world right now these guys are going through. And these guys, when they get down their stance, they're thinking about, like, one or two pointers. You know, like, all right, keep my head down, drive through 20, then I start to pick it up, or how many steps. Like, they're coached to think about all those sorts of things. The breathing in the bench press, like how you breathe and handle the first few reps will determine if you can get probably two more reps than you realize for these guys. It's all coordinated stuff that these guys make money off, make a living off of this time of year.
So before we go to break real quick, Jamie, any fantasy wide receiver? I know it always comes down to fit, but guys that you feel like are immediate impact guys, assuming they go to some place with a quarterback.
I mean, the top two guys, your prospect list, most prospect list, CeeDee Lamb and Jerry Jeudy, I think they're going to be difference makers right away. I do think there's going to be, as we saw last year, so many guys that if they end up in the right situation, Terry McLaurin, third right. round pick, A.J. Brown, what was he, third round also, right? Second round pick.
Second.
Metcalf, third round pick. Deebo Samuel, guys that weren't at the top of the prospect list, like N'Keal Harry and
Hardman.
Marcus Brown. Same thing. He didn't have a big statistical year, but, just in terms of some of these guys. But, I think, Jeudy steps on the field right away. You could say, okay, if he's with the right quarterback, right offensive system, I'm drafting him as somebody that I'm
going to use. Let's say Jeudy goes to the Jets. We know they have help other places. Brady's making a face, but Sam Darnold's a weapon. But what about, and then let's say Jalen Reagor goes to the Saints. Are you immediately going, okay, Jalen Reagor, fantasy-wise, is probably going to have a better season?
No, because like we saw last year, McLaurin steps into the Washington situation where there's nobody.
Nothing.
And he all of a sudden just soaks up all those targets, and you see what the potential could be. We did our fantasy podcast, the guy that I said coming off the draft for the same reason was Deebo Samuel. Now, he didn't have the same success like McLaurin, but no clear guy in front of him that you're going to say, because remember, they traded for Emmanuel Sanders. No clear guy in front of him that's going to completely dominate targets. So I would take the starting receiver for the Jets over the second guy. And in some cases, Jared Cook and Alvin Kamara, second and third options behind Michael Thomas. You're talking about maybe the fourth guy best.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk a little Dak Prescott.
The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, we're back. Mike McCarthy talked today for the first time as Dallas Cowboys coach at the Combine. Anyway, JLC, let me ask you this, because I asked Scott Pioli this earlier today. How much money have the Cowboys squandered, I don't know if that's the word we want to use, by waiting a year to sign Dak Prescott?
I mean, look, I can't crush them too much. I mean, this guy could have made, 29, 30, probably 31-ish, depending on exactly what the last offer was. On the table in September before the season started, it's not as if they lowballed him. He just went out and cousined it. He went out and Flacco'd it. Yes. I mean, timing is everything. Yes. And he didn't want the bird in hand. And he said, what happens if I do play 4 years for $5 million and my fourth year is far and away my best year? And it was. And so I look, and they've got more money to spend than anybody. Their revenue streams. Nobody should be worrying about where Jerry Jones's money's coming from or how much he's paying anybody, because he's making it hand over fist in a big way. When he bought that team for $170 million, people say it's worth $5.5 billion. So Dak's worth whatever he gets. And at this point, if I'm him, I honestly would think about, if I just did what I did and they're going to have to put the exclusive tag on me for 30, I'll cousins it again. Like, if you don't come at me with something that the APY starts at 40, I'm cool with this, bro. And in this new CBA, there might be, we don't know all the details yet. What if you can only be franchised once in your career? Or what would the second tag is going to be so high? I mean, what if I end up making 75 or 80 for two and I'm still hitting the market before I'm 30. It never happens, right? Russell Wilson thought about doing it, didn't do it.
Yeah.
And he makes a ton off the field. I don't think people realize that. When you're the Dallas Cowboys quarterback and you're successful, Campbell's, all Oikos, the endorsements he has.
The
he's
yogurt,
got
right?
multiple national endorsements.
I did a hit with him in the Super Bowl where everybody's making their rounds on Radio Row. You had to go to Dak Prescott. He had a separate room where he was doing his yogurt stuff, and that was the only thing he was doing that week. You know, right. So he was right? very content with you come to
he's
me.
He's got Jerry, and then we'll see what happens with these franchise tags, whether they can still do anything with Amari. But if I'm him, I'm not sweating it whatsoever. If you come to me July 15th and you completely knock my socks off, and it's $120 million fully guaranteed and $40 a year for the first 3 years, fully guaranteed, and then we got funny money in years five. 4, 5, and 6, but if he keeps doing this, they're going to renegotiate before then anyway. Yeah. Then I'll sign it. Anything less than that, I'm good.
I think you have to change the philosophical approach of players to think how Kirk Cousins did.
Yeah.
And that's not easy to do. You know, I think it's human nature to try to take whatever is offered up front, probably more than the 1 year exclusive franchise tag. It's hard to turn that down because, you know,
It's generational money.
It's generational money, but it's also just the fact that, like, you don't know what's going to be offered after this year, right? So all of a sudden you're saying that there's the potential that, yeah, I make my 30 for this 1 year deal, but if they're offering me however much, 80, 90, 100 million, whatever, it's tough to turn that down, and regardless of what the average annual salary is. So Dak Prescott has to drive it. It can't be his representation because an agent is going to want to try to top Russell Wilson's so he can brag about that. He can share with JLC. So JLC can break it, and then we can talk about how great of a deal that he did.
Well, you just talked about them being competitive over 40 times. Presumably they're going to be competitive over salary more so than how fast you run. You know, I mean, just in terms of being competitive people playing a really competitive sport.
I don't think that has as much to do with it. You know, I think every quarterback looks at it differently. You know, every quarterback probably looks at, oh, I'm the best, I should be paid that way. But there's also an element of it too, where it's like, I think all the quarterbacks who are starters want to say, like, look, when I am viewed as a franchise guy, I want to make sure when I'm up, I'm up. And the next guy knows when he's up, and he's going to try to, you know, surpass that. I think that all the quarterbacks who are franchise guys, they understand, like, what's good for them to surpass Russell Wilson is good for the next quarterback too, right? It's a brotherhood in that way. It's a fraternity in that way. And so not only is he looking out for himself, but he's also looking out for everyone else. So let's just say he does take that 1 year exclusive franchise tag deal, balls out again. Eventually they got to come to the table and they got to surpass whatever that number is, whether it's Russell Wilson's or if someone, you know, goes past that number.
If he plays it out, if he does that, if he says, go ahead, I'm going to be Cousins, tag me, and Mahomes before week one gets 40 and Dak does what he did this year, he will beat Mahomes and he'll beat it fairly significantly.
How good is McCarthy for Dak Prescott?
I think it's not even just Dak. I think he's so good for the entire team.
You do?
Yeah, because you don't have to go through, like, talking to some first-year head coaches who are here this year, and I won't say who. You know, you talk to them, and whether they're successful or they weren't successful, and this is multiple guys, they'll all say to you how different this experience is now being here this year. Like, they know what they didn't know a year ago. They know how to better approach it. And it's not the case with Mike McCarthy, right? He's sharpened his skill set. He's
hopefully
dipped into the analytics world, and I think he's come out with a clearer view of how he wants to do things more efficiently, and he's going to be able to have a better sense and pulse for the team, so he's not necessarily dealing with a lot of firsts. He's got things to revert back on. So I think if Jerry and Dak and all involved for the Cowboys want to win now, he was their best option for that. So it's not just about Dak to me. It's about all the pieces involved.
When I spoke to Dak at the Super Bowl, he said he was thrilled with the hire because he didn't want to have exactly what Brady talked about. He didn't want to have to go through the first year
learning
stumbles,
curve. Somebody else's learning
the learning curve of a college guy, because there was some talk, you know, Lincoln Riley and maybe Urban Meyer and, you know, right, some of those rumors that we heard. So he was really excited about, you know, and I'm sure that's a selling point for him. Not that he's looking to leave, but if he did have that option, you know, this is something that you think would want to keep him there. The interesting thing though about Dak, you know, you said the brotherhood. How much does the brotherhood of trying to get other guys paid because they have so many free agents, you know, and some key guys?
That's Jerry's problem, man. Why do people want to make that out like that? I know you're not.
I'm just asking.
You're just presenting the argument.
No, I'm just because, like Brady said, it's the brotherhood of among quarterbacks.
Dude,
you know, he's got those
players understand that you got to do what's best for you and get yours.
Agreed.
Really
agreed. But, you know, what's good for him is having Amari Cooper. You know, in that regard.
They don't have Amari Cooper, they'll have someone else.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the God's honest truth, man. Like, that's not your job to do that. And the other thing is
but if when you're back at this point in your 40 career, to 38 or 38 to 35, you know, what's
Trump's cap?
Yeah.
Like people, so many fans get so obsessed about the cap on these billionaires. I covered Redskins teams. They weren't very good, but Dan Snyder proved it. You can have
a lot of
five guys making over $12 million a year back 10 years ago and still find a way to make it work if you're willing to keep doubling down.
Archuleta, Randall L. I remember those teams.
These guys could. Nobody shed a tear for Jerry Jones. Right. I mean, you can get her. It is not a hard cap. It is very fungible. And if you're willing to continue to spend, yeah, eventually the credit card bill comes due, but hopefully you've won a Super Bowl in due time. So franchise tag or no franchise tag. And the other dirty little secret is for about 4 years, Dallas was in the bottom 10 of spending year after year after year. Mike Brown spent exponentially more than Jerry Jones on payroll over a 5 year period. So sorry, bro. You want to keep Amari Cooper, you could pay him more than anybody else. You can do it. The money is what really matters, and you have more at your disposal than most owners in this league.
Right.
One first-year coach that's here, Matt Rhule, said this week, I absolutely want Cam here. There's no doubt about that. End quote. I also heard Matt Rhule say that he has to guard against guaranteeing guys they're going to keep their jobs because this isn't college anymore. Brady, you had a similar foot procedure to what Cam had, right?
Yeah.
So how comfortable do you feel about Cam being the guy in 2020, knowing that he had that procedure this offseason?
Yeah, I mean, I think it probably takes a year to be 100%. And so that point would come at which some point during the season. But yeah, I got to be honest with you, you know, looking at him walking around during Super Bowl when we saw him, considering the time frame, you know, he looked like he was progressing well. You know, if he did have a procedure done, and I don't know the specifics of his procedure versus mine, but same injury. And, you know, I think the only question about whether or not he's there just comes down to what's potentially offered for him if there is a trade market, and then how he's going to fit into Joe Brady's offense. You know, I mean, that's a huge piece to all this. Because I do think Joe Brady will figure out the best way to how to utilize what they have, and Cam if he's there. And it is on an economical deal, but that doesn't exclude the Panthers from also drafting a quarterback because they're not paying much for Cam in his last year. Yeah. And it might be crazy to think of him as a bridge quarterback, but maybe he is. You know, maybe they take someone in the top 10 with number 7 overall to eventually replace him after this year.
Is there any concern that Brady's 30 years old, Matt Rhule is unproven in the locker room with the older guys? Do they care, or if you win, no one cares?
I think this about coaches in the NFL. If you played, does it matter? Yeah. There's no doubt players initially have a lot of respect for coaches who have played. But if you're a coach and you can help improve that player, if you're genuine, if you're a no-bull type guy, and you can teach them something and like kind of change how they look at it, they'll be all on board. The only problem in saying all that is we don't get to the real adversity until you get to the season. When wide receivers aren't getting the football, or that technique's not working, or they're starting to lose games, that's where then you start to question everything. And so the culture that you develop, especially as a first-year coach, whether it's Matt Rhule or anyone else, that's the biggest thing. And I think they're in a rebuild mode. You know, whether or not you feel like that, they're in a rebuild mode where they want some of those younger guys in who haven't been other places or haven't experienced Ron Rivera, because it's easier to sell your vision when it's the only thing they know coming in from college.
So one of the things we talked about at lunch today was potentially rebuilding the Panthers, and our guy Jonathan Jones was talking about trading Christian McCaffrey, and the conversation came up for two first-round picks. That seems extreme, but is there any notion that they should move on from Run CMC, I call him C-Mac, or is he a central piece of their offense?
I love Wilson's nicknames for people.
I mean, if you're getting an offer like that, of course you move on from him if you're getting two first-round picks for a running back.
Should you move on from him even if it's just one first-round pick, even if it's like three second-round picks? I mean, he seems a pretty important part of their offense. Why would you move on from him?
Unless, again, you're getting blown away by something that's a franchise-changing deal. Look, then he's a short-term building block. And the reason I say short-term, just because of the position he plays. I mean, God willing, from his career, for the Panthers fan base, for fantasy, I mean, he's a superstar. So you want to see him, you know, have 10-plus years in the league. But that's just not the case of what the average, you know, career span is at that spot. So if you can get something overwhelming, two first-round picks, I don't know, three second-round picks, but, you know, top 10 pick for McCaffrey, you know, something that can, you know, alter your franchise, and they would have two first-round picks, two top 10 picks, then you do that, or you certainly consider it. Because you got to pay McCaffrey now. And what have we seen
from... He's an airback, though, Jamie.
Well, it doesn't matter. What have we seen from running backs who have gotten paid? You know, Todd Gurley, David Johnson, Le'Veon Bell, you know, go down the line. They just do not perform at the same level. Now, hopefully he's different, but that's hard to say it's going to be Casey.
There's nobody trading. Even for him, nobody's trading two first-round picks.
Of course not.
Yeah. And, I mean, could you get a late one and something else for him? I guess. But if you're also Carolina, it's not like they have a ton of guys to pay. Right, Kuechly just retired. We're saying maybe they move on from Cam and at some point have a quarterback only making $5 million a year. That's going to be that – he's going to be that quarterback's best friend. Do I love paying backs? No. Should they pay him for another couple of years and structure the deal wisely? I would, because no one's going to blow them away. If at the trade deadline next year, they look like they're even more in rebuild mode and there's an offer you can't refuse, great. Right. But they're not, it's not a guy that they would be marketing to move the way like the Jets were trying to get out of Le'Veon Bell 6 months after getting in.
Every team has a price for any player. Now that price may be completely fictional because it will never happen, but every team's got that price for him. But, you know, I look at Christian McCaffrey and I think to myself, Joe Brady has to be, you know, pounding the table saying
Matt Rhule was yesterday.
Yeah,
on our set.
Not even that. Yeah. I'm just saying, look at how he utilized Clyde Edwards-Helaire. He's a perfect fit for Joe Brady's offense. You better believe he's going to want that piece in this.
And I mean, how many guys at that position catch 100 passes? You know, he's not just a running back. Like you said, air back piece.
Right.
And he's got fire in the belly, too.
He's fire in the belly. All right, so that's it for today's podcast. We'll be back tomorrow to talk about the first workouts. And, by the way, earlier on Wednesday, our CBS Sports HQ guys were able to chat with some of the top running backs. You'll hear Jamie talking because I kicked off the set, so I couldn't talk about the draft.
Why'd you get kicked off the set?
I had to go to the bathroom.
Thank you.
You will hear number two. It was only number one. But we'll hear from J.K. Dobbins, Jonathan Taylor, Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
Everybody here heard number two.
Cam Akers, DeAndre Swift, and Zach Moss. We'll be back tomorrow. Thank you for listening.
We are here with J.K. Dobbins out of Ohio State at the Combine out in Indy. We're sitting here. We got a monitor. You just saw sort of the rankings. You're regarded as a top three running back in this class. I'm curious, do you allow yourself to kind of look at where you're at, where you're stacked heading into the combine and eventually the draft?
Earlier in the year or earlier in this process, I looked at it and I see a lot of people putting me not number one, so I just put it away.
Not number one. That's important to you because you think you're the best back here in the draft.
I definitely do.
What do you have to show this week and the pro day and leading up to the draft? What do you have to show them that you are? What do you think your weakness is that they might be doubting that they don't have you won?
Definitely, I can't show it in, like, combine drills, but pass protection is a thing that I can show. And a lot of people think or try to put out the idea that I can't catch good, and I think I had 70 catches and I had 20 plus catches every year at my career at Ohio State. So I definitely think that I just have to show them that I can catch.
The versatility in catching the ball is so important to the NFL. There are some guys that you look at that you maybe model your game after, you know, players that have either played in the NFL now or maybe guys that have played in, you know, previous years.
Yeah, I try to I know I don't get used like him, but I try to emulate Christian McCaffrey. He's a tough runner. I think we're built kind of the same, you know. He's a little taller, you know, but definitely like his game a lot, you know, and I try to play like him.
We had him on our set for Super Bowl week, and he said, I don't want to be considered a running back. I want to be considered an offensive weapon. With the way the running back is sort of viewed in the NFL today, do you kind of feel a similar way?
Yeah, I feel a similar way, you know. If my team would have used me that way, I definitely feel like I could have stepped up to that task, you know, but they use me out of the backfield a lot, and I try to help my team in any way I could.
When you were talking about, you know, the criticism of you not being able to catch, you referenced some of the stats. I think some people that tuned in saw, man, the Fiesta Bowl, he had a couple rough drops. And I hate to bring up the sore subject, it's sort of something that has driven you nuts. But what do teams say, like, as far as where did the drops come from? Like, was it a mental thing? Was it just took your eye off the ball? Is it something as simple as that?
Yeah, so the first pass that I dropped, the screen pass in the Fiesta Bowl, I honestly knew that there was going to be a touchdown. And so I took my eyes off the ball too fast, and I dropped it. You know, my mistake. I can't do things like that. And then the second touchdown, I don't really know if that was a drop. You know,
yeah, it was a tough throw. It was a tough throw.
I don't know if that was a drop. So, but it was counted as a drop. And, you know, I just got to work on when I hit the ground, I should have never had the ball like that. I should have just had it cradled like that. But
is it frustrating? Like, does it piss you off when you hear people, like, criticize? Or, like, even a question, like, it would irritate me if I was a player. Do you get bothered by it?
Nah. It's what people do, you know. If they don't really watch my film, they don't know anything. And if you see, you know, me the pass being overturned, and then the drop screen pass, you're like, oh, he can't catch. But you go watch the film, people know that I can catch, you know. But I have to do a better job. If I don't drop those passes, then there's nothing for people to say like that. So that's my fault, and I'm glad they criticize me because it'll make me better.
Is that something that's been brought up in the interview process with some of the teams, and how's that gone for you, some of the questions you've been getting?
Not a lot of teams bring up, you know, just the Fiesta Bowl, the drops, or the drop screen pass and stuff like that, but they do ask me, like, how I think I can catch, and I tell them how I feel. I think I can catch very good, you know, and so I just have to prove that to them whenever they work me out and do things like that.
What's the craziest questions you've gotten?
I haven't gotten any crazy questions yet. A lot of people try to, like, figure out if I do any bad things. But I think I'm a pretty good kid.
And, like, poking and prodding. They just want to pull something from you.
Yeah, huh? So I'm like, somebody asked me, so what's your bad habit? Like, and I was like, if playing video games is bad, that's my bad habit.
We're running out of time. I got one more question, though, and I know everything's projecting forward, but let's just look back a little bit at your time at Ohio State and Ryan Day. How would you describe Coach Day and obviously taking over for Coach Meyer and what he's done as he tries to continue that while you're gone now going to the NFL?
Yeah, Ryan Day is an amazing coach. He's a genius. He took over the job, and there was no, like, drop in the program. It was just the culture is set there, and Coach Day is holding that up. And he's an amazing coach. I love playing for him. I'm glad I got to play for him. That's a guy that I would tell recruits out of high school that they want to play for, because he'll get you ready.
All right, we got to wrap things up. JK, certainly appreciate it, man. Best of luck the way this week, and then we'll see you at the draft, man. Appreciate it. All right,
thank you.
Live at the Combine, Danny Cannell, Jamie Eisenberg, and with us now, as you mentioned, Jonathan Taylor out of Wisconsin. We've been playing the game of how long you guys been doing medical. What was it like for you yesterday? 7 hours?
7 hours. 7 hours.
Seven long hours.
7 hours to hear my name called just to hear that I got the okay.
That was it. What'd you do to prep for this moment? Like, from the time your last game to now, what have you been doing?
So currently I'm in Phoenix, Arizona at the Exos facility training. And really from day one, you're running through all the drills, you're running through all of the tests before you get coached, just to see where everyone's at, because everyone's at a different spot. So I feel like John Barlow and Nick Hill, the head guys there, they do a great job at running it. And, you know, after you go through that week of pretty much going through the program, they see where everyone's at, then you start getting dialed in. You start getting the little details, the little one-on-one attention with the nutritionist, with Nick, with Barlow. So you really have been prepping for this moment for a long time. Now at this point, it's just about execution and really just being yourself. A lot of guys come and try to, you know, put on a show, but really what the coaches want to see, what everyone wants to see, is who are you? Who is Jonathan Taylor?
And who is Jonathan Taylor? Like, what are you telling these teams when they're asking you some of these wacky questions? You know, what's the interview process been like for you?
So the interview process has been really fun for me. I enjoy being challenged. You know, after you've been in the program for a few years, you kind of understand the playbook. You know the ins and outs of it. So when a coach is here and they're presenting a new protection to you, or they're presenting one of their offensive schemes to you, and, you know, they're asking you, can you repeat it back to me? Or, you know, can you show me this scheme versus this front? I kind of enjoy that because it's like I'm learning all over again.
When we talk about running backs, we talk about tread on the tires, and you had an incredible career at Wisconsin, which I think some teams might be a little bit nervous about because you carried the ball so many times, broke Herschel Walker's record for the, you know, first 3 years running the football. Has there any teams been concerned about that? Have they asked you about that?
No, there hasn't been any teams that asked me about that. And one part, I think, is due to me not missing any practices or any games throughout my college career. And, you know, shout out to Coach K and the strength and conditioning staff at University of Wisconsin for giving me the knowledge and also putting me in the position in order to prepare my body for that kind of workload throughout the season.
You're keeping an eye on the prospect list, you know, DeAndre Swift, you know, Zach Moss, the guys just, you know, where you're being ranked and slotted, and would it be something special to you to be the first running back drafted in this class?
Oh, it would definitely be something special to be the first running back off the board. I mean, that's why you're working so hard these past couple weeks, is to try to make sure you were at your best to let these coaches know that, hey, you know, I'm your number one guy, I'm consistent, and I'm able to get the job done, I'm able to get the job done well.
All right. Our time is short. Johnny's got to go up to the big podium, talk to the other media, but we open them up here. CBS Sports HQ getting ready. Hey, best of luck this week, and we'll see you at the draft, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you guys very much.
So we got national champion of the LSU Tigers, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, joining us here I was asking DeAndre Swift this question because you're in the running back group, but you're well represented with Joe and Thaddeus, and you guys have been split. You guys find time to connect though a little bit in the last couple days?
Oh yeah, no doubt. Being able to, you know, I've been talking to DeAndre probably more than anybody. So, I mean, cool guy. You know, just kind of we understand like we're kind of in that same category as far as like what teams are wanting or looking for as our skill set. So for the most part, man, whatever he can help me out with, he's telling me. And for the most part, whatever feedback I'm giving him, I'm telling him. So I mean, you know, it's at this point, it's not, you know, it's competition. But for the most part, man, you also want to see the other guy excel. So
I was gonna ask you about the competition. I mean, you know, we've had you know the best of the best running backs, including yourself, come up here in the last couple of minutes. Everybody says they want to be the best. How important is it to you to be the first running back drafted in this class?
Oh, it'll mean the world. And then ultimately, me believing in myself, I feel like I am the best running back in the draft. And it's as simple as that. I feel like I can do everything. I feel like I have the most tread on my tires. I feel like I didn't have the 800, 900 yards, not 900 carries as far as my career. But for the most part, everything that needed to be displayed was something that was done. And I kind of think back to last year with Josh Jacobs. I mean, he was the first back off the board, and he wasn't even the starter the year before. But they understand. I mean, if a guy can play, a guy can play. And that's pretty much the gist of what I'm getting. So they understand. I'm doing my thing in the formal interviews, and you know every team I'm walking out of, I'm leaving an impression on.
We had Joe Burrow on yesterday, and he was talking about his decision not to work out because. You know, everybody else has an extra few weeks to prepare. Have you felt like this is a cram session because you guys win the national championship, then there's parades, you go to like it's a lot, and then this process is sped up. Have you felt like it's a cram session?
I really didn't. I feel like I had a lot of off time, which is weird. I was training twice a day, but I mean, I had my weekends free. I was able to chill and, you know, just kind of relax. I was in Carlsbad, California, and nothing is going on in Carlsbad, California. So I was able to unwinding on the weekend and doing my thing Monday through Friday. So I didn't feel like it was crammed at all. I feel like I'm as prepared as I can be for the combine, and I'm ready for it.
How much did that offense at LSU just suit your skill set? Like you said, you know, your skill set for the NFL, but how much did that offense prepare you for this next level?
It did everything that it needed to do and everything that it could do. I was able to do the things that I'm good at. And the biggest thing, you know, Coach O preached it. He wanted to find a guy that can change everything as far as getting playmakers in space. This offense came in and I was able to just go to work. Everything was natural about everything that went on.
We're looking at some of your highlights right now. Obviously the SEC on CBS was a big package and you were featured a lot throughout the year. The range of motion, I'm interested, like when you got together with Joe Brady, the passing game corner, did he know what you could do? Did you go to him and say, I got great hands, I can come out of the backfield, I can take me in the slot? What was that first conversation, either spring ball or fall camp?
We didn't really talk a lot when he first came.
Really?
He
nothing.
He was big on he was in the receiver's room, you know, get the things down as far as quarterback to receivers. That's the, you know, that was the big part. I mean, I was one person, so he knew. I mean, I think he came in, talked to some guys like, hey, you really don't have to worry about Clyde. Whatever you tell him is going to be done. And he's going to make it happen. So the first real conversation was on the practice field.
Probably when he saw the field said, oh, okay. Yeah.
It was spring ball. And he was like, man, I need you to do this. You make it happen. This is what you're going to make money on for the rest of your life and you're going to kill it this season. And from that point on, everything just took off.
What do you think's the biggest concern that teams have about you and how are you going to address that?
I feel like nobody has a real concern. You know, the thing that they see on film is our offense was 85% of the time we were in five man protection. 10% of the time we were in six man, and then when we were in six man, it was me checking the wheel side linebacker and then getting out in the route. So around 90% of the time I was out in the route. But as far as being able to get film from practice and everything else, as far as pass pro and the things that we worked on, I mean, they can go back and watch it. They can go back and see it. He's a, you know, I'm all around. I can do it all. You know, running between the tackles was, I think, almost 80% of my runs. And, you know, that's, you get the, you know, he's small and everything else. But I mean, as y'all can see, it's the year of the short running back, per se. So, I mean, you know, we guys making it happen, and ultimately I feel like I made it happen, and not only in college football but in the SEC.
It's a loaded class, and obviously it's going to go, you know, probably 100 different ways before you get to actual draft day.
Yes, sir.
If you're not a first-round pick,
yes, sir.
What's that motivation going to be like to prove the 32 teams that passed on you why you should have been maybe the top guy in this class?
It's gonna, like I said, you know, I've been saying in the interviews, my sophomore year, they kind of lit a match in me. And that kind of started the fire of everything. And, you know, if you want to strike two matches and be on the other side of that ball when I'm playing against you, you know, that's on you. So, ultimately they're going to watch the film and whoever doesn't get me, I feel like they're going to be genuinely hurt about the situation because they're going to realize like, okay, we gotta go face this dude and he's gonna be the real deal. So, you know, they could strike the second match, but right now it's an inferno lit inside me.
Clyde, certainly appreciate the time. By the way, we had a string of running backs. Confidence not lacking in anyone, right, guys?
No.
Clyde Edwards-Helaire joining us here at CBS Sports HQ. Best of luck the way.
Here in the HQ set, we do have Cam Akers, and I'm usually put first question to me, but majority rules here. So we got a Gator, we got a Spartan, but we got two Seminoles. So Danny, I'm going to let you go first here and give first
there. We go. We got to look out for each other. We got to show each other love. No, but I've been telling people that people are sleeping on you because I see you listed as the fourth or fifth running back. And I think if you played behind an offensive line like DeAndre Swift had at Georgia, or if you played behind an offensive line like Jonathan Taylor at Wisconsin, I think we might be talking about you that way. But you played behind a bad offensive line. I mean, it's been bad, and I think you've proven to be tough. I think you've proven to make plays when there's nothing there, which is really valuable. You're versatile. You can do a lot of different things.
Yes, sir.
Do you feel like you're underrated here with some of these other running backs?
Definitely feel like I'm underrated. I definitely feel like my situation wasn't the best. You know, I'd never be the one to say my O-line was bad or they didn't block. I take full responsibility for any deficit that was in my game. But, you know, I definitely feel underrated, and I definitely feel like I have something to prove.
Danny mentioned it. Do you feel like you're the most versatile running back in this group?
I mean, just what
you're able to do catching the ball. Just, I mean, it's such a big part of the NFL right now, just being able to be that versatile type of running back. Just talk about how you go about approaching that part of the game, catching the ball, being a good blocker, or those things aside from just running the ball.
I try to work on being a three-down back, you know, as far as blocking, running, and catching. In order to stay on the field, three or four downs if need be, you got to be able to do all three. And that's something I take pride in doing.
And you even played some quarterback. You know,
yes, sir.
They had you doing everything.
Trick plays, too.
Yeah, they'll trick plays, everything they need from you. What do you think you have to show the scouts, kind of, if there is any question marks, what do you want to prove to them that you can do here at the Combine specifically?
Definitely my speed. Definitely the speed. I've been hearing a lot of questions about, am I fast enough? Do I have the top-end speed? So, you know, my 40 is really important to me this week. And I think a lot of people have a lot of woos when they see it.
What's your goal for the 40?
Low 4.4, high 4.3.
They'll definitely be wooing them on if they do that. How about the 225?
20 plus. Yes, sir.
What's been some of the conversations you've had with teams? Because obviously that's the second part of it, is not just watching what you do running.
It's been a lot of X's and O's. You know, a lot of can I identify defensive fronts? Can I block? Can I know? If people are blitzing, can I pick up blitzes? You know, just a lot of X's and O's.
What's the wackiest question you got?
Can I handle Miami?
The Dolphins have a need.
Exactly. They do have a need. Do you have a spot that you would like to go, or are you just kind of open to all 32?
I'm open to whoever is interested in me. You know, can't be picky. You gotta go wherever likes you. And that's what's going to happen for me. That's where I am at it.
All right, we got time for one more question, so I'll be the one to ask you the change in format. Are you a morning guy? Obviously, the shift to nights, and you mentioned what you need to prove and what you want to prove. So how do you anticipate handling sort of that night format?
It's nothing to handle. You know, you don't have to get ready when you stay ready. You know, whatever situation thrown at me, I'll be ready for it.
All right. Cam Akers joining us here, CBS Sports HQ. Best of luck the rest of the way. We'll see you
at
the
draft.
Right. Appreciate it.
Much. I'm here with Uga's own DeAndre Swift joining us. And we were talking about the offensive lineman our first hour. Now we're doing the running backs. Had Zach Moss and now DeAndre joining us here. The theme we've been talking about for today's guys, these medical examinations and these long visits, like what was it like for you kind of sitting and waiting and just wanting to maybe get it all done?
Yeah, it was long. Yesterday was a long process. I got into medical and in the hospital about 9 o'clock in the morning, didn't leave till 6 o'clock and got right back to dinner and getting ready for meetings and stuff. So it's a long process, but you only go through this once. So you kind of try to embrace it and keep a smile on your face.
Most guys are pretty prepped coming in, whether it's your agent or your team, whoever people are telling you what to expect. Has it been pretty much what you thought? Has there been anything that surprised you?
So far, I didn't know the informal meetings were going to be as crazy as they are. A lot of people in the room, a lot of people wanting to talk to you. But like I said, you're here for a reason, so you got to embrace it. But
so in those informal meetings, what type of questions are they asking?
Me personally, we've been talking ball, a lot of background stuff, but getting me to draw plays and kind of remembering their plays and stuff. Seems like I can remember and retain information quickly.
You're on a lot of people's, the top of their rank list as the number one running back coming into the draft. How important is that to you to be the first running back taken?
Well, that's a blessing. There's a lot of great running backs in this draft. So just to be announced as one of the top guys is a blessing. Can't take that for granted, but just got to come out here and show why I should stay up there.
You guys in Athens have had a pretty good run of running backs that have gotten drafted and played at the next level. You kept in touch with some of those guys, Sony Michel, other players that have been through there, and kind of talked to them about the transition and what to expect?
Most definitely. I always kind of try to pick their brain and see how their process was and give me any pointers on how to control anything I can control in this process. I talked to them about last week about stuff going on today.
Do you get a lot of comps that maybe you like or don't like, you know, players that you compare favorably to, or some guys you're like, really? I don't really see my game matching up with that particular guy.
I haven't seen too many where I don't see my game matching up. All the ones that I got, I'm like, I thought I'd play like him when I was younger. So it's kind of cool to see that.
Is there one like that stands out to you?
LeSean McCoy. I used to always watch him when I was younger. Just the way he make people miss in space, just create different opportunities, just to make stuff happen. I think I do that.
I got to tell you, and Danny could probably reference because he probably met him once or twice, but when you walked up here and shook our hand, the last time, and immediately, last time that I remember that, Adrian Peterson, he's got one of the hardest handshakes ever, and you have a very strong handshake. That speaks volumes, probably have some good hands. Is catching the ball something that you pride yourself on?
Oh, most definitely. I think that's what makes me so versatile in my style of play, just being able to create mismatches and make people miss and get open and be a reliable asset in the passing game.
A couple of your teammates are here. We've talked to them. Jake Fromm's decision to come out. I'm curious, what was your reaction when Jake Fromm said he was coming out?
I'll support him. Either way, if he stayed or if he left. I love Jake, like my brother. So I was going to support him either way, and I was backing his decision.
Do you guys, because you guys get split up into groups, whether it's Andrew, Jake, or yourself, you guys find time to kind of connect while you're down here? How does that work out so far?
Yeah, anytime we're in a group, we was just with each other. Just now, anytime we get a chance to sit together,
okay,
as Georgia Bulldogs, we always kind of catch up and see how everybody day went and just see how everything's going for each other.
What's it going to take for Georgia to get over that hump, to get that national championship? Because you guys have been knocking on the door so long. I know it was something you probably wanted to do. What's it going to take?
It's so much small stuff. Just little inches. It starts with just off-season training. I know they're training hard. Coach Sinclair's got them doing a great program in the weight room. So just taking the little stuff, and I'm always doing more, you know, staying ready all the time.
You said it would be a blessing to be the first running back taken. Are you keeping an eye on the other guys? Like Tommy said, we had Zach Moss up here, obviously Jonathan Taylor, J.K. Dobbins. Do you keep an eye on what's happened with them and, you know, following some of the prospect rankings as well?
I'm not keeping an eye. Like I said, every running back here is here for a reason. I'm just blessed to be at the top, be talked about at the top. I'm just here to compete and just show all the scouts why I should stay at the top.
Do you have a ideal team landing spot, a team maybe you rooted for when you grew up that you'd love to go play for?
No, I would love to go to whoever wants me. And I'm going to put my best foot forward every day whenever I get there.
There's some talk about the Falcons maybe moving off from Devontae Freeman. I know you're not a Georgia kid originally, but staying in the state, would that be something that'd be cool for you?
That'd be very cool. I'd be happy. I'd be happy.
Today's NFL has even the best running backs go relatively by committee. So when you envision yourself going into a team, being a part of not just yourself, but maybe two, three other backs. How much of that helped you in college, what you guys had to do, what you anticipate will be in the league?
I think that's big. You don't get a lot of wear and tear on your body, and it keeps you fresh for whenever you need to go in. You get to put your best foot forward. Whatever play, whatever your number's called, you're always ready. Not taking 30 carries a game or whatever the case may be, but you're available if you need to do so. But having multiple guys and in that offense is amazing.
Yeah, but you gotta want the ball.
Jamie's a fantasy guy. He's like, he wants you to get the ball, be like the next Josh Jacobs, you know, get out there and play well.
That too. It's all about winning. It's all about winning. Like you said, if you're available and they want you to get them 30 carries, and you can do so. But You don't need to.
Just forget the cameras. Forget the audition for the new job. You want to. Just say, I want the ball. Give me the ball.
Something like that.
Like, there it is.
Getting used to the interview process already. There, you got the fire in the belly. DeAndre, we'll appreciate you, man. I know you're going to get up there and be talking soon. So thanks for taking the time. Enjoy the rest of the week, and we'll see you at the draft.
Thank you. Thank y'all for having me.
Yeah, DeAndre Swift joining us here at CBS Sports HQ. We do have Jamie Eisenberg, of course, Danny Cannell, Tommy Tran with Zach Mosh out of Utah. I got to ask you, our studio is out in Fort Lauderdale, so Indy's a little bit of a change of pace weather-wise.
Yeah.
You and Tyler Huntley, SoFlo, Broward, Miami-Dade guys, what was that like going to Salt Lake when you guys started getting on campus, getting ready to play ball?
It was a huge culture shock, man, coming from, you know, the windy South Beaches and things like that to, you know, snow, sleet, rain. But it was all good. Honestly, it was a good experience for us to go out there, you know, and see different things.
Obviously, we were talking about before we came on air about the time you spent at the hospital getting, you know, x-rays and having to go through the process of getting tugged and pulled on. Teams are probably a little bit concerned. You did have to battle some injuries. What do you want teams to know about you health-wise going forward?
Definitely 100% healthy now. You know, I took that time off. You know, I opted out of playing in the Senior Bowl to make sure that I was 100% ready to go just for this week, definitely, and, you know, moving forward. You know, it is what it is, you know, it's a game and things like that, but, you know, I'm definitely doing a lot better now.
A lot of great running backs coming into this class with yourself. You know, how much are you paying attention to DeAndre Swift, Jonathan Taylor, you know, some of those guys and just some of the buzz that's going around with them as well as what people are saying about you?
Very little. You know, these guys are been good to, you know, hang around with and, you know, get to know a little bit better, just besides playing football and things like that. But, you know, I'm just, you know, I have a very, you know, head-down approach. Just making sure that I can, you know, control my controllables.
What is your best asset that you can sell to an NFL team? And then what is the thing that you think you need to improve on to go even higher than you want?
Honestly, my knowledge of the game. You know, I feel like I'm a pretty good student of the game. You know, I have a very high capacity to try and learn this game and continue to learn this game. Things that I want to continue to work on is just, you know, being more elusive, having more explosive runs in my game. And I feel like if I continue to do that, I'll be, you know, a lot more better rounded off.
Being a student of the game, is there some guys that you watch growing up or maybe continue to watch that you sort of try to model your game after?
I watched a lot of Marshawn Lynch growing up. I like Ezekiel Elliott. Big fan of a lot of guys, but those two predominantly were the guys for me.
Do you try to, like, copy some moves when you're, you know,
definitely
at home?
Definitely try to implement some moves into my game. I think you can see a lot of Marshawn the way I run and, you know, how I approach the game.
When you watch and you know, you probably try to ignore some of the mock drafts, but when you look at landing spots, there are a handful of teams maybe you think you have an opportunity. You look at their depth chart and say, I could see myself playing for that team?
Yeah, you know, I can see myself playing for any team. You know, I'm going to come in, work hard, you know, and try to adapt to the city, to the community and the fans the best way I can, you know, to try and be a great teammate no matter where it is.
Dolphins have an opening.
That wouldn't be a bad spot, honestly. You know, kid from Miami, go back home, play in front of my family and things like that. Wouldn't be a bad spot, but, you know, like I said, I'll be blessed to go wherever this process takes me.
We're looking right now at some of the running back prospect rankings from our guy, Ryan Wilson, our draft analyst, and you're there. Got you in the top five in the terms of position groups. I'm curious to kind of get your thoughts. Are you a morning workout guy? Because now they're switching it to prime time. How do you plan on anticipating? Because we talked about all the medicals and all the interviews. The physical stuff when you get ready for Friday night, what's that going to be like for you?
You know, just warming up, making sure that I'm focused all day, keeping my body ready to go. If it's just, you know, push-ups throughout the day, just having blood flowing, making sure that I'm loose and just ready to go. And, you know, this is something I want to continue to dominate.
You play on the Pac-12. It's like waiting for a late game, right? You just got to wake up all day. You're ready to play
much.
Ball. And you
got
to sit and wait through dinner before you play your game, huh?
Pretty
what
much.
Are your goals as far as 40 time, 225 bench? What are your goals?
The bench, I want to be somewhere around 20. 40, I want to be somewhere around the 4.5s.
When you spend some time getting ready for the combine, I see you know around guys like Kenny Galladay, Brandon Cooks. What's that like to be around some of these guys while you're working out, getting ready for this process?
It's cool. You know, you see success. You know, it makes you want to work harder and strive a lot harder. You know, and then you see what it takes, even in the off season, to continue to, you know, be at a certain level and what that takes.
You talked to those guys during some downtime about just, you know, those things that you mentioned, just trying to.
Yeah, I was, you know, those guys came around a lot while we were out there training and things like that. You know, they definitely spoke to us, you know, and, you know, just told us to enjoy this process for one.
be grateful that we're here. A lot of guys, you know, don't get an opportunity to be here and things like that, and then just make the most of our opportunity.
All right. Zach, certainly appreciate the time. I know you got to get up there on the podium, talk to the media. Thanks for spending a few moments on HQ.
No,
good luck this week.
Thanks for having
me, guys. Best of luck the rest of the way.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.